Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the V2 Academy. I'm Chris Lappin, and joining me this week, I've got football coach and blogger Peter Prickett.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very well. So shortly we'll be joined by former Jamaican international and Bradford City legend Jamie Lawrence. But first, in the last couple of interviews you've mentioned the England DNA. And I noticed today that Sam Allardyce has rejected an offer from the FA to have all the junior sides play a similar style. Do you think it's a bit short-term planning on his part? He doesn't think he's going to be in the job for very long, or do you think that he just...
It could be a couple of things. It may well be that he sees the current version of DNA as being for the younger age groups,
yeah,
suited for development. But when it comes to the England team, his England team, he wants to be able to do what he needs to do to win.
Because teams like Barcelona and Ajax are famous for playing a similar style throughout the whole club, so does it need to happen this much at international level? Because I think Spain do it.
Spain and Germany and Belgium, it's all far more joined up than it is here, because the FA have control, or far more control, of the top division than the FA have in this country. So, an extent, the top clubs, they're not regulated by the FA, so they can decide to develop players as they see fit. They don't have to fit with the England plan. Now, coaches coming through the system will be touched by the DNA on their journey, so it will rub off, but there's nothing to stop this being overridden when it gets to the clubs.
Yeah.
So he even gets the players, Sam will, and there's no guarantee that they will have learned, or all have learned, to play in the same way.
No. I just think it's, if you're playing in the under-21s, I think that how they wanted to do it is you can just pick somebody from 21s and put them in the first team, and then you'll know how the system works, isn't it? That's the basic thinking behind it. So.
That's certainly what it is at club level.
Yeah.
Whether that is exactly what the thinking was with England or not, I don't know. Finally, my last piece was on the England DNA, and how the term DNA itself strikes me as slightly deceptive, because your DNA is who you were, not who you're going to be.
Yeah.
So, this England DNA is who they want England to be, and how they want England to play in the future, not necessarily what they did in the past. So it's more of a wish list. So, based on that, they're hoping that players develop in the way that is set out within the DNA document, but there's no guarantee that that's actually what will happen. And in the end, with international football, if we played where we parked 10 players behind the ball for 90 minutes and we got through the group with 3 draws and we won every knockout game on penalties, would anyone care? Because you got the trophy.
That's a good argument. I know we all like to watch fantastic football, but it's a results-based game.
It is at the top level.
Yeah.
When it comes to development, performance is more important than the result. So these DNA strands whereby they play in a certain way, in my view, are more important with the younger players than they are with the senior team.
Yeah.
I think a part of Roy Hodgson's failing was that he went against his own footballing instincts and seemed to try and fit in with the DNA, and it didn't work for him.
Yeah, I think Sam has shown in the past he's his own man. He tried to change it at West Ham in his last season, didn't he? It makes a nice solid team, and eventually they do become a better footballing side. You saw that Bolton in the end, where he had Dorkiev and Okocha up front, and They were pretty solid at
Bolton, the flair players, if that's what we want to label them, the exciting players, they got an opportunity to shine. I don't think anyone watched Bolton and thought, oh, that JJ Okocha's got really dull now.
Yeah.
So they did get a chance. We're all trying to guess, really. We don't know exactly what he's going to do. We don't know how things are going to set out. We we have an idea of how Sam Allardyce plays. We have an idea that how Sam Allardyce plays doesn't fit with the current DNA.
Mm.
But, as I just said, if they win, will people care?
Yeah, we'll find out. His first squad has been announced on the 27th, so we can see if he'll make any huge changes to the Euro squad then. So we're delighted to be joined online by Jamie Lawrence. How are you doing this evening, Jamie?
I'm not too bad, mate. How are you?
I'm brilliant. So many of you will remember Jamie as for his time at Bradford with his crazy hair, and he's the club surviving tonight in Liverpool, the Champions League place.
Yeah, great times.
Do you remember that day, Peter, as a Liverpool fan?
I remember that being planted in the top corner.
Yeah, pulses stand by Liverpool.
Yeah.
So you're a Liverpool fan as well, aren't you, Jamie? You'll say that one's the last interview.
Yeah, I'm a Liverpool fan. Well, Bradford, my first team, but Liverpool, my second team. So I'm quite excited with what Klopp's doing down at Liverpool at the minute.
Mm. So where did the whole crazy hair come from? So I remember you being at Leicester with like the Jason Lee pineapple head and a different colour.
I was the first, by the way.
Yeah.
It's come half me, by the way.
No,
I just like to be different and add a little bit of fun into the football. I think he's a bit too serious and when the fans started getting onto him and that. I just took it with a pinch of salt and that.
Yeah, so the main focus of this interview is going to be around your coaching. So when. From playing, what was your route into coaching?
For the first couple, 2-3 years, I found it hard, obviously, when you finish playing football, you don't know what you're going to do and all that, especially when it comes to an abrupt end and that, like, where you had no chance to plan for the future and that.
Mm.
So I then went back to, got educated again, I'd done a level 3 of personal training and that, and then I started my own football academy in South London. For like disadvantaged kids and that.
Mm-hmm.
And started training a lot of these boys and that, and then turned a few into like professional footballers. And then obviously the name spreads all over the place and that. People start taking you serious and that. And then I've done a few non-league stuff, but non-league's hard because I'm used to being professional and that, and then a lot of the non-league players and that are not very professional what they do at a football club or outside of a football club. And then I got the opportunity to work with Ghana about 18 months ago. And now I work with a lot of top class footballers with strength and conditioning and coaching and all that away from their clubs and that. So it's been a journey, a massive journey.
Yeah, you did have a brief spell as a manager of Ashford Town in 2009. How did you find the difference between being a coach and being a manager? Was it?
Coaching, to be fair, both of them were sort of the same. Coach, you've got to knit the dressing room together with the manager and all that, so you're the glue in between them, both of them and that. So, like, you've got to find out what's going on in the camp and all that and try and pacify everyone and that, you know, and see the mood in the camp. Like, we had some great, I've played on some great coaches, great managers and that.
Where did you
learn
your football?
On the street. I learned football on the street. I never played for any professional club until I was 23. I was playing for like a couple of local, normal Saturday and Sunday teams, and I always got told, "No, you're a good player. You shouldn't be at this level. You should make it to pro and all that." But the breaks never come. But I never stopped working and I never stopped believing.
How much contact did you have with coaches, or even, well, not just coaches, but qualified coaches in those early years?
I've never had no qualified coaches when I was growing up, not one. I had a man called Pete Rhodes, who was our Sunday League manager. He taught us a lot about winning, really. And we had a great team at that time as well, but never had no qualified coaches and all that. And sometimes people bang on about coaching this and coaching that, but it's that will to win what gets you over the line at the end of the day.
No, I was going to say, so if it wasn't quality coaching that got you to become a professional, what was it?
Yeah, it was, he was a winner. From when I was
come through when you coach now at your academy.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like this losing. Oh, it's taking part rubbish. It's not about taking part, it's about winning. You ask any fan in the country, and that asks any top player, and they'll tell you it's about the winning.
It's interesting because all the England courses or FA courses, we talk about, or they talk about development and putting the development over the results. So
yeah, but you develop by winning. If you lose, yeah, you still learn from losing. But England, you can't talk about England because England ain't won nothing for I don't know how long, and you see from the Euros, it's wrong what they're doing.
Yeah, your academy is set away from an FA environment, away from a club environment. So has that allowed you to take a different approach to what you do?
Yeah, because when I know a lot of coaches and they have to deal with these players with kicks, gloves, especially at like youth level and that. And I think it sets the wrong precedence on that, because like these kids nowadays, they're not doing boots, they're not doing jobs, so they don't understand what life's really about. How many of them are going to make it as a professional footballer? Not many, so
we know
the percentage is probably about 1%.
Yeah.
1% probably, alright? So you have to learn life values as well, about working hard, doing jobs and getting your hands dirty. Right? And these clubs are not teaching them that, and I tell all these players, because a lot of them come to me, I've had seven players from Chelsea this summer, four from Tottenham, one from Arsenal, and various other clubs, right? And I tell them all the time, they come to me, I've got Ruben Loftus-Cheek, and they'll come to me pre-season, and they'll be with me again on Sunday. And I tell them all the time, you've got to work at this game, and you've got to be humble, and have respect for everyone, because it can go in a flash. But also, you've got to learn life skills, so if it does go wrong, you can do something else.
Do you feel they've got it too easy then, in a bubble?
Yeah, you can say they got it too easy, but then you say they got it too easy. They'll lose some meat at the end of the day, because a club will just get rid of them and get someone else in if they're not doing their job. Right, and that's what I try to explain to them all the time. You have to be on your job all the time. Right?
Do you get the impression they're surprised when they think someone's going to take their place, or when that comes to them? Is it like they think, I'm good, I'm quality, the coaches are being nice to me, they must think I'm great.
And then
when someone comes along and says, that ain't good enough, you ain't good enough, it's a shock.
Yeah. It's a shock to the system. And it's been nice because it's been refreshing working with some of these players like Ruben Loftus-Cheek, great attitude. Casey Palmer, great attitude. And I don't see that much in a lot of the footballers nowadays, right, where they're not getting into Chelsea at Chelsea, and one's at Huddersfield on loan at the moment, but he was injured in pre-season, so he's just coming on at the sub, 20 minutes. They're ringing me up and saying, can we come in Sunday to do a bit extra? And you don't really get that. And these coaches don't really challenge players anymore. Where I want to get the best out of all my players, and I know every player can do more than they think they can.
So the youth awards and youth modules talked about setting individual challenges for players, but I'm assuming when you say really challenged, you've got more in mind than just, we've noticed in your game you don't get wide enough, when our central midfielder receives it, can you pull out more? You're looking for real challenges.
I'm looking for real challenges. The boys come to me, especially like Casey and Ruben, especially, they came to me and they've never done nothing right. In the first three sessions, Ruben was sick and Casey couldn't do no more. Physically, they couldn't do no more. But you know, after like four sessions, he's flying. He's like a machine. He's gone back and he's absolutely flying. So like a lot of these sports scientists as well, they wrap him up in cotton wool, tell you about can't go past this red zone and all that rubbish. So what happens on Saturday when you hit the red zone, they're going to take you off. Right? If you don't train at intensity, when Saturday comes,
talking at the moment about the professional players coming to you. Within your academy, what age groups do you actually cover? So obviously you're up to, with Ruben Loftus-Cheek, you're into the 20s. How low down does it start?
From 16 upwards. There's no age limit who are trained, but we are starting youngsters from about 11 upwards soon. In about a month's time, we're starting another soccer school for like 11, because I think it's better if you get them earlier, then you can put their stamp on them, you know.
So, for the players you've got at the moment from 16 up, is the focus more fitness-based than technically based?
No. We do a lot of football work, but fitness is very important because it makes you mentally. All my players are mentally strong in the end. I test them mentally, physically, and emotionally sometimes, you know.
Sure, absolutely. Okay, so can you describe some of the more technical work that you would do with players? What do you focus on there? Is it ball work individually 1v1, or is it possession?
No. Every day is different. Like, Monday after a weekend, normally it's a hard day. It's like, not people, small-sided game. They'd be doing running, doing little ball, one-on-one ball drills and all that. And we do a lot of technical stuff to start with. Then we go to games, then running, then we go to more small-sided games. So every day is different. Depends what I think they need and all that. So I'll go off my players. And then on Friday and all that, we'll do a lot of finishing drills, but a lot of them have got games on the Saturday. So finishing drills and small-sided game to end.
You wouldn't push one topic as your overall focus more than others. It's really...
I'll cover everything,
It's interesting you say about finishing, because something that I'm changing with my club, with my team for next season, they're going to be 16. We're going to do a lot more finishing, because I've found that good quality finishing can mask a lot of other elements. If you can finish, you take your chances, bang, bang, bang. Confidence goes up.
All day long, because in games, you get you don't get many chances in games, but if you're ruthless, and it sets you up for the whole game, you know? That's what I like. The more you do it as well, the easier it gets, because you'll be in a game, you say, like, I've done that in training, not a problem. You won't even snatch at things like that. You know, so we do a lot. Like, if you go onto my Instagram stuff, you'll see a lot of it on my end.
You obviously can't do all of the coaching yourself. That's physically impossible.
I do everything myself.
Do you not have any coaching team at all with you?
No, I do it all myself, because I know that no one will deliver it like I do. So I will go to the gym in the morning. I do strength and conditioning stuff with other people, and I work as a personal trainer. Then I leave from there and I go to my academy to do all the coaching stuff. Then I come back to the gym.
It's quite a workload, quite a commitment.
Yeah, listen, you don't get nothing without working hard, mate.
Oh, no.
It ain't work, really. I enjoy it.
Yeah, that's what I was about to come to say. It's more than work, isn't it? It's passion.
Yeah.
It's dedication.
Yeah, it's enjoyment. Yeah, obviously, because I got into the game late as well. And I got in at 23. I know what it takes to make it to football, and I value it, you know.
Do you believe that more ex-players, especially ones that grew up in an inner city, should go back to the areas they grew up in and teach kids about life?
Yes, I'm a great believer in that. And where I come from as well, I came from prison as well.
Yeah.
So it's needed, because these kids, boredom is what gets them into trouble, you know. And if they see a positive role model coming into the inner city, instead of seeing these bad boys on the road, they've got nice cars, girls, watches and whatever. Instead of following that route, they might go to the positive role model.
Yeah. So your remarkable story can be found in your autobiography, From Prison to Premiership, which was published in 2006.
Yes.
What was the process you went through in writing the book, and are you planning any more?
about life after football and that. And we're talking about doing a film as well, actually, on my life and that. So, yeah, the process of, I had a ghostwriter, so I was with him like 7 months and living up every day and that. So,
yeah.
Just sat down and he was just taking notes and whatever, you know, and bringing up managers and whatever, and then talking about it. So, yeah. But this one I think will be a better book and the film will probably be better as well.
Right, so we've had a couple of listeners' questions sent in. So Thomas Burns asked, obviously prison is a memento effect on people's lives and families. Did you ever stop for a second during a match in the Premiership and think, what am I doing here?
No. When I first signed at Sunderland and I went to Middlesbrough, it was my first game, and they actually played Jailhouse Rock. Right, but I had to pinch myself. I walked out of prison like 3 months ago and now I'm stepping out at Ayrton Park.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. It took me about 6 months really to come to light with it, you know.
And Anissa Rahman asks, whilst playing for Jamaica, you played against Brazil containing the original Ronaldo. How special was that for you?
Yeah. Oh, mate, it was ridiculous. I played for Jamaica, it was near the pinnacle for me because, when I got called up, my dad was dying.
Oh.
And I got called up when he was on his deathbed, actually. So he never got to see me play. So obviously playing for Jamaica was a great honour. And for my mum to be watching me play was a massive honour. And then playing against the world champions at the time was probably the pinnacle of my career, you know. And we only lost 1-0. So I'd take that all day long.
Yeah. So do you have any more questions, Peter, before we finish?
No, I haven't got any. I just want to say, really, really interesting talking to you and getting a different perspective on things. It's all very, I think things can be very prescribed these days, and people end up doing the same thing from the same point of view that they've all picked up from the same place. So to hear something different is refreshing.
Oh, top man. Thanks, mate.
So do you want to plug your social media before we go, Jamie? So.
Jamie Lawrence 7. And Jamie Lawrence17 on Twitter. Jamie Lawrence17's on Instagram.
Yeah, okay. I'll put the links in the description below. So I've really enjoyed speaking to you today. I'd love to have you on again in the future. So.